Welcome to Mecha Do About Nothing, the only mecha podcast recorded on a nuke in the upper atmosphere. I'm your host, Shin Ian Gregory.
And I'm your host, Shin Daniel Forziat.
I thought you should have said like Daniel Forziat G. Like, we're all different kinds of getters.
Oh my gosh, Ian!
I should have communicated this gag with you beforehand.
Half millisecond to hear what you said, think of something while saying my name. Gosh. Alright, redo.
Alright.
I'm
your host.
Daniel Forziat Getter G.
Getter G. Alright, this week, as promised, we did the first 6 episodes of Getter Robo Armageddon. And I think our research paid off, Dan. I think this would have been...
Did I not tell you?
I think this would have been incomprehensible without any knowledge of Getter Robo.
Like, no, I'm serious. I want to go to the Wikipedia page and change whoever wrote it's standalone. It's not. It's by no means standalone.
It's standalone in the sense that, like, it's not a direct sequel to any of them, right?
Sure.
But it's also not a standalone in the sense that it's literally a direct sequel to every Getter Robo.
Exactly.
It's not helpful to say that. All right, let's. There's actually like so much to cover here, just in terms of how this was produced. So,
sure.
This is animated by Brains Base, 1998. It's not a studio you hear a lot of, but they're still active. They've done a lot of pretty popular anime over the years. But they're not who you think of as like a mecha studio, right? They're not on the list of studio names that were like, oh yeah, like Sunrise or Nue or some of those other guys that we always recognize as being mecha people.
Do you know particularly what works they've done besides this?
They've done a lot of shonen stuff. Let me see. I think their most recent one was like Inspector last year. They also did Spice and Wolf, Bakano, Durarara, okay. Princess Jellyfish, great manga. Let's see. My teen romantic comedy snafu, Ore ga Airu, that's popular. Let's see what else here. Duel Masters.
Oh, okay.
Oh, they're doing To Your Eternity. I've read that. And then they did a bunch of Mazen Kaiser, Assassination Classroom, Super Robot Wars animations, more Getter Robo stuff. So a mix of that sort of thing. But a pretty long, I mean, let's see. They started, according to this, their first animation was this one, 1998.
This was their first?
This was Brainspace's first. It was founded in 96. Yeah, it seems like their first release. But they've done a lot of really big stuff since then.
Wow, this looks really good for like someone's first ever release.
Well, I doubt that any of these staff, this was their first anime, right? I think this is probably a studio that was formed from people leaving bigger studios.
So this is like the Death Stranding of...
Yeah, this is the Koji Pro of Konami, yeah. Alright.
Okay.
So our director here, this is where things get tricky. Our director at first is Yasuhiro Imagawa, who directed such hits as Giant Robo, The Day the Earth Stood Still, and Mobile Fighter G Gundam. Dan, do you remember what little piece of detail this has in relation to Escaflowne? So originally, Imagawa was going to direct Escaflowne.
Oh,
and they
planned
to do it, and Kawamori wrote it for him, and he wanted to focus on, you know, shonen action stuff. As you can tell, that's his bag. But he left to go do G Gundam instead. And then he went on to do this. So here's our little connection. Imagawa. Little surprise that the same guy who did this did Giant Robo, right?
Uh-huh.
I think they might be exactly the same. And then...
That would make sense.
After episode 3, though... Imagawa leaves the project, and our new director is Jun Kawagoe, who has almost exclusively directed other Getter Robo, Mazinger, Mazen Kaiser stuff. A lot of Go Nagai and Kenichikawa works.
Okay, so he's also familiar with
everything. One of his earliest director, I think, directing positions. Unlike Imagawa, okay. Who is at this point an experienced but well-known for going over budget director.
Nice. He's literally Kojima.
Let's see, our character designer, we've got Kenji Hayama, who did character design on, again, all of these are Brainspace shows. I'm going to list a lot of shows that were all done by the same studio. Karagehime, okay. Mazen Kaiser, Karas. Karagehime is a shoujo manga that I've read. It's about fashion design. Mm-hmm. It's really good. So,
Oh, okay.
Mecha design. I could only find one person listed for this, which seems strange to me. But it was Tatsuo Yamada, who did mecha design for GR, Giant Robo, different from Giant Robo, The Day the Earth Stood Still. Okay. Durara and Mazing Kaiser. Mazing Kaiser is the reboot of Mazinger Z.
Oh, okay.
And then our music is Yasunori Iwasaki, who did music for Vandred, Amainaide. Dan, how do you say this one? Amainaide, yo. And some newer Captain Tsubasa.
Sure, that's close enough.
Sure. And newer Captain Tsubasa. Great music, though, I think, in this show.
New Captain Tsubasa, I know about him.
You've heard of Captain Tsubasa?
I've never seen anything, but I've heard.
Culturally, you're aware of Captain Tsubasa.
Yeah.
So
it's the soccer thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a game. Yeah, no, I'm aware.
So this is like a really interesting staff. I think it's very obvious that the director left after three episodes.
Well,
there's a good plot there's a thing that happens there too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe we'll talk about it more later, but. There's something about the directing, like the tone change and the way things change three episodes in. I'm not sure it works.
Listen, it's a big thing to do in a 12-episode OVA or 13-episode OVA.
I honestly, this is a question that I don't know can be answered. If Imagawa left plot notes and the new director like knew where the story was going even after he left... Or if, like, he left and they were like, oh no, what do we do? This is somewhat comparable to, Dan, Stardust Memory, which changes directors six episodes in and gets significantly worse following the director change. And that's another situation where I think, did they rewrite the ending? Did they scramble to make this work? Because the second half of Stardust Memory sort of kills all of the characters. Not kills them literally,
it's so weird
kills them metaphorically.
Yeah, it's so weird how prevalent this seems to be in the mecha anime industry.
Mm-hmm.
Where directors will just be like, I'm out.
Or they get fired. I mean, Stardust Memory, they fired her, the director.
Oh, okay. Well, that would make
and
sense.
And I think I wouldn't be surprised if Imagawa got fired on this project. let me see if Wikipedia has any information on us on that. Let's see. Due to an unknown disagreement with the staff, he left the project, leaving the story in disarray from episode 4 and onward. So that implies to me that they did not know how the story was supposed to end.
Yeah.
You can tell.
I imagine, like, did he get blacklisted for doing this?
I think he's still doing work, so...
Dang, that's, like, really ballsy to be like, I'm done. And then you leave, and then just, like, not completely destroyed by the industry after that.
He last directed that's like a show big... in 2014, but it looks like he did not direct... He mostly does writing and manga now, it looks like.
I think people have caught on to his
No,
ways.
He directed Tetsujin 28 Go in 2004. So...
Oh.
I don't know. But yeah, I do think that there might be... he might have been moved off of full director duties based on this.
Probably.
You're right that this does seem to happen a lot with mecha anime, though. I wonder what that is about. Maybe it's because mecha anime are, like, difficult to produce. Like, physically to draw. Expensive.
Yeah, and it also seems like everything we listed also seems to be an OVA series. So maybe there's, like, a timing thing.
Mm.
Like, if you have to do, like, a show by week, there's less time to sort of, like, bicker or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, if when you're doing an OVA, you're director, but you're also episode director, whereas on, like, a 50-episode show, different people are directing different episodes because they're rotating through, because you physically can't direct every single episode because of the way animation works.
Yeah.
How about I do this summary, and we'll just jump right into it.
Heck yeah, let's do it.
This story opens at the end of the Moon Wars, an event where alien invaders attacked and conquered the moon before being defeated by the Getter Squad. However, Dr. Saotome, the inventor of the Getter Robo, was murdered by Ryoma Nagare after Saotome's daughter, Michiru, died. However, the invaders are revealed to be still around, as is Dr. Saotome, who did not actually die. Saotome promises to destroy the world, so Ryoma is freed to fight him. Saotome creates a human clone named Go, who he intends to pilot the Shin Getter Dragon. Ryoma reunites with Hayato, who was actually the one who killed Saotome and framed Ryoma, and Musashi. They come close to stopping Saotome, who almost explains his plot, when the Japanese government fires a nuke. It's revealed that two of Saotome's assistant scientists were secretly invaders, and they alter the nuke so it affects the entire globe. Musashi dies. 13 years pass, and 99% of the Earth's population is dead. Most people live underground, and the invaders are continuing their plan to conquer Earth on the surface. Hayato leads a super robot army from his mobile tower, and Benkei raises a teenage girl named Kei with the remnants of the Japanese army. They all meet up while chasing down an invader, and Hayato resurrects the Shin Getter dragon. From inside the dragon emerges Go, piloting the Shin Getter robo, assisted by Kei and Benkei, and later, Guy. They fight off the invaders, but learn that Saotome is alive, though he is mostly an invader. Saotome reveals that Kei is actually his daughter Genkai and asks her to join him, though she instead launches in the Getter to destroy him. How'd you like that? I tried to keep it brief.
That was good. I liked it.
For highlights, there's a couple of really good ones. For me, it's... So
yeah, there's some good scenes.
Hayato and Ryoma are together in the dragon. They're both pointing guns at each other's heads, right? Because Hayato framed Ryoma. Ryoma doesn't trust him.
Yeah.
He's like, maybe I'll let my gun find out. And then at the exact same time, they spin to the side and fire simultaneously at something off screen. Like, perfect
sync. Like a demon thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just them, like, threatening to shoot each other and then turning and unloading a clip in a completely different direction was really funny to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Another highlight for me is that there are invaders who get morphed or mutated in this Getter Dragon thing, and one of them becomes a dinosaur man, and one of them becomes a demon man, and it's clearly like, oh, it's the enemies from the original Getter Robo. I just like that. Mm-hmm. This show is full of stuff like that, but I like that acknowledgement.
Like, a similar thing to the manga that I liked is that, like, I think maybe it's because I watched the first episode of this before I read the manga, but like, I really like how it captures like Ryoma's like just destructive anger.
Yeah,
he's just so angry. And I guess this will tie into our first discussion point, but I've been watching in the dub.
Yeah,
and I actually really like his screams, because he just screams everything. He sounds a little bit like oh man, I can't believe I forgot his name. Who's Goku's voice actor?
Sean Schemmel.
He sounds a little bit like Sean Schemmel when he is, like, really screaming.
Right.
Which I really dig Goku's Sean Schemmel scream.
So I've been watching in the sub, and I've really liked it because the screams are so good. Because they got, like, the attack call-outs where he's like, get a beam! But they really milk it, right? They're screaming each word for, like, 3 seconds.
Yeah.
And yeah, Ryoma's is really good. Go has a couple really good Getter beams too in the sub that I really liked. But it's really, everyone's like, I almost never say this about anime voice acting because it's always over the top, but this is way over the top. It's beyond over the top voice acting.
I'll have to watch an episode of the sub then, just to see. Well, I'll have to go back in time and watch an episode of the sub.
Yeah.
Because I want to see those characters specifically.
Yeah, you should see like the episode like 2 or whatever, or the end of episode 1 where he's really in the fights. Also, Ryoma's scarf is insane. I love it. It just floats everywhere. The red like cape scarf he's got, it just goes all over the place, and it's like makes no sense whatsoever. I love it. It looks really cool.
Do you think the animators really hated the fact that they had to do that?
No, I bet they loved it. They were like, oh, we don't have to worry about the physics of this thing. We're just gonna make it go wherever is coolest in every shot.
Oh, okay. I figured it was just like, we have another thing we have to animate differently every single frame.
So yeah, I don't know. I'm glad that we're watching on different ends. I'm glad the dub is good too. Because I think
it's not spectacular, but
there's a line.
It's old, right?
In the first episode that I think we should talk about because it is so surprising.
What do you think this is?
So they're talking.
First off, before you say the line, how do you think this line came to be?
Let me situate what we're talking about first. There's a line between Benkei and Musashi when they're driving, right? And they're reflecting on, you know, what happened to the old Getter squad. And they're talking about Genkai, which is Saotome's kid, we think is a boy, revealed later to be a girl. Again, I think for no reason, that feels like a director thing to me, doesn't it? Like a character changed, and they're like, we'll just make this one character this other character, except that we'll switch their gender.
As of right now, their gender has zero impact on the story. So
no, they were just like, oh, well, she was raised as a boy. And you're like, what? Why?
Yeah, but like, yeah, but like that doesn't have any.
It's clearly like a cover up, I think. But yeah. So they're talking about this, and they're talking about how the kid Genkai witnessed Saotome's death. And
yes,
I think what happened is they wanted a line to reflect that Genkai no longer communicates, right? Completely quiet, closed off, doesn't say anything to anyone, is not a social child, was really traumatized by what they saw. The line they choose is, it's too bad he turned autistic.
Wait, I'm sorry for laughing, because it is just such an absurd line. If you
it's
know how
too bad
autism works.
He turned autistic. I think they say at such a young age, which really makes you wonder, what do they think autism is? Like why?
Well, okay, what? So did you watch this episode in sub?
So I watched it in dub before we read the manga, and then then I switched to sub now that we've read the manga. So I've seen this episode in both sub and dub.
In sub, do they say the line?
The translation is the same. It's identical. I don't know what the actual Japanese is and if that's a liberty taken by the localizers. But,
yeah.
As far as I can tell, Dan, you might have to watch it in sub.
Yeah, I might have to dig into there.
You're the only one
there.
Here who knows Japanese. it's a questionable call.
Yeah, well, you could say that. Also, like, I don't know, when was this localized? Was there just different information about autism
if it was
then?
I, like, when it came out, like, that was the late 90s, and it was probably even a few years after that. It was probably in like the 2000s that this actually came to America. So
it's just
you
it's
should
that
have
line.
Known enough.
Yeah, that line just caught me by surprise. I'm watching it, and I just don't expect them to just drop this very, like,
yeah,
very questionable line out of nowhere. But other than that,
they really could have said anything else, right? This is just the...
Like, traumatized?
Yeah, it's too bad
he's
been traumatized.
Oh, he became traumatized.
Yeah.
He became mute.
Yeah, it's like, too bad he was, like, yeah. Eek, okay. First, Dan, let's do a little roll call here. We've got a lot of characters.
Oh, God.
Almost none of them are original to this anime.
Yes.
So a bunch we know from reading Getarobo, right? Ryoma, Hayato, Musashi, Saotome, Michiru, the one scientist dude with the scar over his eye.
Yep.
He's in. When I saw him in episode one, I was like, oh, it's that guy! And then he shows up again later. These are all from the original Getarobo. We know all of them. I don't think Genkai was in it, though, because Saotome's son in that was an adult.
Yes. And he was older than Michiru.
Yeah, and he dies in, like, chapter 3.
Yeah, he gets torched.
By his father. by the way, when they showed the cloning tanks, I really thought for a while that the plot was going to be Saotome trying to resurrect his dead son.
I actually thought so, too. And
wow, they're actually going to, like, think about the ramifications of Saotome killing his kid? No.
But that is not the case.
Benkei, who appears alongside Musashi when they're driving the truck in the first episode, and then later on raises Kei. He, in Getarobo G, is the one they bring on to replace Musashi after he dies. So he's another, like, classic Getarobo character. And he's pretty important in this. Go, who in this is the clone that's created in that tube by Saotome, is the main character of Getarobo Go. He's not like his character, I don't think, from what I read about Go. But that's who it's meant to be. In Go, he pilots the Shin Getarobo. Then there's... So, yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, so if we perfectly wanted to know who everyone is, we would have had to watch or read Getarobo Go.
Getarobo Go and Getarobo G. It looks like this is mainly based on Getarobo, G, and Go. Like those three.
Okay.
Then the blonde pilot Schwartz, the mean guy who almost shoots Kei and, you know, he's a jerk. He's from Go. Guy, the other guy who pilots the Shin Getarobo at the last episode, he's also from Go.
Okay.
So I think this is like, I think those three are considered like the first three Getarobos. Or they're like, you know, they're like the big three in terms of like old school Getarobo. So this is like a takeoff on those three. And it takes like elements from all of them and characters. And that's why we see in the big fight scenes, there's a lot of original Getarobo and a lot of Getarobo G. Like, Getter Liger is from G. that sort of thing. So okay. I think that's like the constituent elements here. We figured them out.
This is like literally the exact same as Giant Robo, where you just have to watch every single thing up until this point, because this is like the Avengers.
Yeah, you have, like, to, all right, you have to look here at your list of all of the people who were in... I loved finding out on TV Tropes just the list of characters in Giant Robo and what manga they're from. And this is a lot like that, God, but it's a little narrower because it's just...
Yeah, yeah, series. It's only three shows.
And really, not, the main characters are...
They're only 50 episodes.
Yeah, I think it's fair, and I think it's actually not too hard, because like we established, the manga is short. Like, G and Go aren't really any longer, I think, than the original. And this is supposedly based much more on the manga than the anime, which makes sense.
Well, I would believe that, because yes, it's very... It's something else.
Yeah, speaking of something else, didn't really expect the world to be destroyed in three episodes, right? I knew this was called Armageddon. I didn't think it'd come so quickly.
The problem I have with this specifically is not so much just like the entire reset we get, which is really hard, but the fact that like up until this point, there's the scene, I guess it must be episode two, where they're like, the alien invaders are like turning the earth back into like a primeval state.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Well, yeah, they fire the Getter beam and it devolves earth back to like, there are like dinosaurs walking around and stuff.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, cool. This is like a cool setting.
So they're going to revert earth back to its primal state. No.
And then it's all gone in one episode. And I'm like, what was the point?
So here's another thing that bothered me. Also, like episode two or three, they're all standing there on Shin Getorobo's hand. Saotome's there, Hayato's there, Ryoma's there, Go is in the cockpit just chilling because he doesn't have a character yet. He's too new, basically. And then Saotome's like, I'll explain everything to you. And then him and Hayato like do this back and forth where they talk about how they're not really like all these illusions. And Ryoma just says, come on, just tell it to me like I can understand it. Like he just asks them to give it to him straight. And they don't. They don't explain anything. Nothing gets explained. They keep saying for two episodes, here's what's going on. And then they always get interrupted by something and never explain. One of my least favorite tropes. Don't promise an explanation multiple times just to take it away. That's not real suspense.
What a tease.
So we don't know what Saotome's motivation is, what was up with the day Michiru died, what, like, why Hayato framed him, why Saotome apparently is anti-invader and also working with the invaders. Like...
And listen, we may never know.
We may never know, because clearly the new director hasn't an idea either.
So we'll see how it gets retconned. Well, here, I actually have a question. And you probably can't answer this, and you don't have to Google this. But does Michiru die off-screen, or does she die in
Getorobo G? In actual Getorobo.
Or, yeah, or, you know, Getorobo Go. Because... It seems like those other shows don't have anything to do with Ryoma, and Ryoma seems to be the cause.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine she dies in the other shows. But...
Okay, here's... Do you want to know the answer?
Is it going to spoil the rest of this show?
No. I looked up, oh, then, I yeah, looked I up do her main timeline answer. History from, like, oh, the okay, manga sure. Getorobo. She's in Getorobo, of course. She's in Getorobo G. She only appears a few times in Shin Getorobo... And then she dies, I think because everyone dies at the end of Shin Getorobo.
Oh, God. Okay, so we had to have watched Shin Getorobo as well.
but that's not, it's not, she dies in a way very different from what happens in Armageddon, right?
Okay.
It's not like she specifically dies, it's like everyone is dead at once.
Oh, I see.
So what happens in Armageddon is clearly different from what happens in the manga, so we would not be expected to know this, right?
Okay, and okay, so to be we clear, might get that explained.
The shot of her dying is a little intense, right? It's a little grim.
They also show it like five times. Yeah, they keep showing it. I feel it. Like.
yeah, so the world ends, it's very symbolic of the director change, right? Because clearly... Say what you will about Imagawa, but he's always got some sort of plan, right?
Sure, yeah.
he knows what he's doing when he's doing this sort of like mashup thing, right? This is probably what he's best at.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it feels to me like the end of episode 3 was like the intro arc, and then episode 4 was going to kick us off on the meat of the series. But instead, what we get is another 2 or so episodes of intro to the new status quo as the director tries yep. desperately to figure out who the main characters are.
Like, what if originally it was supposed to be like four episodes of the different cast?
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you could kind of do that way. Like, have the original cast, and then it leads into, like, Go, right? Because, like, we get a lot of Go in this next section. And then, like, I don't know. I don't know how you would organize
that. No, I know what you mean. But I feel like the first 3 were, like, this prologue where mm-hmm. they destroy the world. And so that way it leaves it so there's only one Getter left, the Shin Getter that they flew in from space. And I thought it would be about, like, them adjusting to this world or, like, the fallout or what the invaders are doing. But instead, the invaders seem to have not done anything for 13 years.
Yeah.
It just feels very much like he was like, all right, the Earth was nuked, and then he had no idea what to do with his characters. So, like, here's what confused me, right? The end of episode 3, they're, like, tunneling into the Earth or something, right? They're in whatever form of Shin Getter Robo, Shin Getter 2, which has the drills. It's drilling into the Earth. They're trying to beat the nuke there, because they can't stop the nuke, but they're trying to beat it there. Then,
mm-hmm.
Hayato is on his own, right? He's left. He's going to do his own thing. He's running this, like, nation in episode 5. But Go is still somehow in the Shin Getter inside the dragon, right?
Mm-hmm.
How did Hayato get out? Who was also piloting the Shin Getter? And then, of course, we don't know yet, where's Ryoma?
Yeah, right. Of course that will be a big, big thing later.
Yeah, so that just felt like, I just felt like he really didn't know what he was doing when he took over.
Yeah, it certainly feels messy, and I, like, again, with the reset, I don't like such a hard reset, where it's like, here's a whole new cast of characters, and it's like, now I have to start caring about all the who these people are, and I have to learn their names, and that's, like, a huge deal, but, like, I was already sort of, like, getting used to the cast again, because everyone looks a little bit different, and they introduce people except in a staggered
Ryoma.
Way.
I think Ryoma looks exactly like in the manga, like, the really angry, like, eyebrows.
Punished Ryoma. Yeah.
But yeah, you're right.
I didn't realize Hayato was Hayato, though, at the time.
Yeah,
like, he didn't different. Look quite the same, but Musashi was, like,
yeah,
he was him.
So, I don't know, I just found, like, I feel like by the end of episode 6, at the very least, he's found his footing, right? He's got his regular team, which is going to be Go, Kei, and Guy, which also, you're right, feels like a huge downgrade from what we were dealing with in the beginning, because we're supposed to care about Kei because she's actually his daughter, but that's such a lame twist. And Guy has no personality. He's just in the background.
Like, I miss that raw anger of Ryoma. Like, that first episode where he just gets in the Getter Robo and goes to attack Satomi by himself. And he's just so angry the
entire time.
It's just like, I like that. And then it's like, oh, I'm sure that will be back, right? Obviously, Ryoma probably can't die, but
no. And I do feel kind of bad that Musashi gets bites in the third episode. It's like, this poor guy cannot live.
Like, he is destined to die in all forms of media. Yeah. He's our Sean Bean.
Yeah.
Like, you put him in there and it doesn't matter.
He's a good character, though. I liked him. I like him showing up in the Getter 3. No. Musashi.
Oh.
I like him, like, seeing, like, I'm going to teach this thing a lesson, and then he launches in the Getter 3. It's cool.
Yeah, it is good.
It's way cooler seeing those moments, Dan, knowing what those machines are. And, like, having a connection to them where, like, Getter 2 shows
up.
Exactly. Like, a drill comes through a wall, and you're like, is that Getter 2? Like, that's important.
I just still so feel bad for Musashi, because I think Getter 3 is the dopiest looking one.
It's pretty dopey.
It's like, get that guy an upgraded thing.
So this isn't really much darker than the manga, right? It's probably about as dark.
No. Yeah, it seems like maybe because of the way it's distributed as an OVA, mm-hmm. they're allowed to ramp it up.
Yeah, it's clearly not, you know, the Saturday morning cartoon style of the original Getter Robo anime.
Exactly.
Yeah, this is definitely, and I kind of like that it's
first episode like a scientist gets like absolutely demolished by a like alien invader.
Yeah.
And when I watched that again, like my innocence was broken many times watching this, because I watched this first episode again before we read the manga, and I was like, this is a little dark, like that, because I think that's the only like big death in the first episode, mm-hmm. besides showing Satomi's like dead body a few times.
Yeah.
And then like, yeah, like I was like not expecting such a dark show. And then again, when we read the manga, I was like, okay, well maybe the manga is more lighthearted. Like, I don't know what's going on. No. Here. And then obviously the manga is extremely dark as well. So
this is it's in some ways a very faithful anime adaptation, at least in yes. you know, tone and mood.
It's a good word to use.
It's still got all of that super robot stuff, though. We were talking about the screams, the over-the-top attacks, the really well-animated and lengthy transformation sequences.
Yes.
There's like a 45-second getter change at one point, right?
Yeah.
Do you think this works, this combination of like classic super action, super robot stuff and Michiru being crushed to death inside of her machine?
Yeah, she gets papped and shirakoed.
She does.
I think I'm used to it now, and so I can enjoy it, but, like, it's really jarring, right? Yeah. Where you're, like, it's, like, very, like, over-the-top kid-like. The Getter Robo, I personally think, looks like, I don't know, it's old, I know, but it's, like, super childish, right? It's, like, super rounded. It looks very much like something from Astro Boy or whatever, and so it doesn't seem like this thing can be, like, a dark, gritty show until you start seeing people just get, like, absolutely killed and, like, blood gush everywhere.
Yeah.
But I think it's found a good footing. If what you've told me is true, that like Mazinger Z and like other Super Robo shows are very much just for kids and they're not dark or anything,
mm-hmm.
I think it's okay to have like that be kind of the gimmick for this show. I don't mean gimmick in a negative way, but it does. It kind of makes it unique. And again, this is like one of the originals,
yeah.
So it's its own thing, right? It's not copying anything, which I think is cool.
Yeah, I agree. It's just, I just, like, wondered, I'm like, is this, are they trying to have it both ways? Is this, I don't know.
Yeah.
Giant Robo was over-the-top action, but not in the same way, right? There's less screaming attack names, there's less of that. It's fairly yeah. serious, at least the color palette's dark, the designs are darker, it's, I don't know, everything felt a little more internally consistent with Giant Robo than it does here.
Sure. No, I agree with that.
Here's a question, Dan. Who of these characters do you care about?
Well, I think that's the thing. I don't know yet, right?
Yeah.
We talked about the original cast,
mm-hmm.
and those are the people I intrinsically care about because those are the people I know.
Yeah.
And I found out that, like, pretty much all of them are gone or missing or dead, right?
Hayato's the one I care the least about, and he's the one who's still around in every episode.
Which I'm wondering if he was, like, a fan favorite at some point.
Because
he's sort of, like...
My understanding is Hayato is the only recurring character who has appeared in every Getter Robo or something like that.
Oh, so he's, like, our Bright Noah.
Yeah, he is, like, a Bright Noah character.
Okay. And Musashi is, like... I want to say he's, like, the comic relief character?
He's the most human. He's the nicest of them.
Yeah.
You know?
And so, yeah, like, I care about him.
He's dead. Of course, yeah. Right.
So oh,
seeing
Satome...
Benkei find his hat in the future was pretty sad.
Yeah. Satome, I, like, didn't really like all that much in the original manga, so I didn't really care about him here. And also, he's, like, sort of a semi-villain with ulterior motives that we don't really know.
And not a very clear agenda. What's his plan?
Yeah.
Right? What was he trying to do? Oh, sorry, he's gonna explain it.
Well, I actually have a question now.
Yeah.
Who's the villain of the show? Like, who is the main bad guy?
Here's what I'll say. In Getter Robo, and in G, because we meet this character in Getter Robo, the Dinosaur Empire and the Demon Clan each had an emperor, right? Or a leader?
Yes, Gore.
Yeah, and Gore whoever. And whoever the other guy is. And they would show up yeah. on screen to taunt our heroes and be like, I am going
exactly.
to destroy Kyoto. And you're like, ah, you're so evil. There was a face. Yeah. And then they fought an endless wave of mook dinosaurs with jetpacks, right? But there was always
yeah, yeah.
a face, like a specific villain. For the invaders, they're like more of a collective, right? They like the newts. So there's no specific villain who just talks to us. Maybe that's meant to be Sao Tome, but Sao Tome is kind of on our side for a bit in the first three episodes. Yeah. And it's unclear if Sao Tome is actually really alive or if it's just someone impersonating him, like an invader just pretending to be him. And then there are those two scientists who are secretly invaders. How you looked at them and thought, oh yeah, these guys seem trustworthy at any point, by the way, seems confusing to me.
They're like, you know, like putting their hands together and they're like, oh no, like we'll stop them. You know, you're like, okay, these guys are up to no good.
But they're not really around in the second half, right? We only saw them briefly at one point.
Yeah, and they're not like... like, they're villainous, but they're not like, I'm Gore, the emperor of the dinosaurs. Like, you know?
It's just... yeah, I think you're right. There's no... we have no idea what the villains want, what they're doing. And it's not even much of a mystery, right? We just don't know. It's not like they're like, we need to figure out what they want. They just want to kill everyone.
Like in Escaflowne, it's like, okay, there's an evil empire, there's the emperor, there's his lackeys, right? Like, okay, at the end we're going to go defeat them.
There's a structure to the enemy.
Yeah, so, like, you know who the main bad guy is, and it doesn't really matter how long it takes to get there, that's the whole show, but you know at the end of the day that's going to be it, or something along the lines. But for this, it was like, okay, Sao Tome is the bad guy. And then he's clearly not, maybe... like 98% sure he's not the bad guy. And now we're just sort of like floating in limbo for like three more episodes where it's like, I think maybe I'm being a little too harsh because I think we're setting up the new cast, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, we set up the new cast and then they'll make a big discovery and then they'll be a bad guy. But also we're halfway through the show. So they got to do it soon.
And I think like another question is, so Sao Tome creates Go to pilot the dragon.
Yes.
To do his evil plan. But Go is like, kind of doing that, and then sort of is just like, never mind, I'm not gonna do that. I'm just gonna be a normal, nice human now. Why? Yeah. How? When? What is Go doing here? It would almost make more sense to make Go like Camille Bedon. And here's what I mean by that. Is, like, you know how we often joke about how Camille Bedon should have shown up in CCA as one of Char's lieutenants?
Yes.
It would have been more sense for Go to have been an established character, like a human, who decides to side with Sao Tome. At first, right? And he's like, Go, why are you working with Sao Tome? He's like, this is what we have to do. And then he could be a human with motivations and opinions and beliefs. And instead, he's just a dude who's there and is conveniently on whoever's side whenever he needs to be.
Yeah, like he shows up and saves people in the latter half, and it's like...
why? What is your... why were you even made? So...
and I wonder if that's just because we haven't seen Getter Robo Go. Maybe there's something there that's like...
just reading the summary of Go and like what this guy's character is like, it's not this. I can tell you that much. He's just a normal... he's a dude who joins the army and then he's drafted by Hayato to pilot the Getter. He's got like parents he wants to protect. That's his motivation. I don't know. Like...
oh yeah, that is dramatically different.
Yeah. So... I don't really understand what's... I do understand why this is happening. It's because they changed directors and they have no idea what they're doing.
Like, do you think it's going to get better? Do you think that he's going to be able to pull it off?
Oh, yeah. No, it's going to get better. Because he's going to be able to, like, recover, right? Like... imagine this is the plane flying up and then it immediately stalls out and we're just now recovering from the nosedive that is the directorship changing, right? Like, he needed time to like assert where the story was going for his ideas. And we're in the last three episodes are this weird transition period where he's like, he doesn't know what story Imagawa was going to tell. He knows what story he wants to tell. And now he has to do some heavy lifting to get things into place to tell that story, right?
Yes. So seven episodes?
Right. So I think from here on out, I think he's got everything where he wants it to be, right? We've got our crew. We've got our villain. Now things can happen according to his plan. But we're really suffering because we had to do that hard change.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, symbolized better than anyone by Kei, the character who is not Genkai. I refuse to believe this.
God.
Is it Genkai or Genki? It's Genki.
They say Genki.
Because Genkai but, like, is the I'm also watching from the Yu Yu Hakusho.
I'm watching the dub, though, so I have no idea if the pronunciation is correct. You know how sometimes
well, they said
like...
they named her after, to make her bright and energetic, which is what Genki means.
Yeah, that's what Genki is.
Yeah. All right, so
Genki.
Let's do the mech corner, Dan. There's actually quite a bit to talk about here.
Yeah.
And I'm looking around trying to find specifically the Armageddon versions of these designs, which can be a little hard because when you look up any Getter Robo, by the way, they just show you the Super Robot Wars art. Like Getter Robo is so big in Super Robot Wars that it's just all of that.
Because that's probably the not to dunk on this, but it's probably the most popular thing that this is in.
Yeah, it is.
Is the game franchise.
Okay. And also, good luck just Googling Getter Robo mech. Like, you're just going to get it. You get so much random stuff because you're not able to find the actual mech. It'd be like just Googling Gundam.
Yeah, it's just like, you'll get a Zaku when you do that.
All right. Let's start with Getter 1. You know, Getter 1, Getter 2, Getter 3. Just the original Getter Robo. Not too much changes here, right?
No, they just look really good.
Yes, that's it.
Oh, I actually have a real quick question.
Yeah. I'm listening.
This is not quick, actually. I take it back. This is going to be involved. I'm going to set a stage here. You have three rockets, jets, if you will, core fighters.
Uh-huh.
They fuse together, combine together, to make some variation of the Getter 1, 2, or 3, right?
I think I know where you're going with this. Go on.
Okay. In those three core fighters are three pilots.
Yes.
And in the original Getter Robo, it's implied that when they're transformed together, the person who is
in the head.
In the head, yeah, is the pilot.
Right,
and
because
the other
there
two
are three
people,
different configurations.
Yes, and the other two people are doing something. But they have to be doing something, because if they don't, the performance will be greatly hindered, or maybe it won't even work.
It falls apart, yeah. It literally falls apart.
Yes. In the very first episode, Ryoma...
I know exactly
what gets in the Getter 1 and goes and fights Satome.
Yeah.
By himself.
He is joined, moments later, by Getter 2 and Getter 3, emerging from underground, right? Piloted by our friends, Haito Musashi, in their original Getters, right? Because Haito piloted Getter 2, Musashi pilots Getter 3. So what we're looking at are three Getters. And then, here's what bewildered me the most, Dan. They're all stuck, and they all change into their core fighter modes. Fly into the sky, and do an elaborate 45-second transformation sequence where they unify into Getter 1. The same Getter 1 that Ryoma was just moments before piloting on his own. Then,
so
they split. Well, they get in Shin Getter, and then Musashi stays on the ground, right? So that's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
In Getter 3. Later on, they need all three of them to pilot the Shin Getter, right? Or they say something like, three pilots makes a Getter much stronger, which implies you can do it by yourself, but does not explain the magic trick that was turning three full Getter Robos into the core fighters and then combining into a single Getter 1 and why you would do that.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a bit of retcon, maybe we missed something, maybe they were upgraded in the other shows.
Yeah.
But it seems that you don't need three pilots anymore, which I thought, like, I thought that was, like, the whole point.
Yes, it was.
It sort of removes the gimmick
that
is, what I thought was kind of crucial to the show, or to the manga, but whatever. I, you know, speed things up, I guess.
Yeah, barely any redesigns really here. They just, you know, touch them up, make them look scarier a little. Getter 2 in particular looks good.
Okay, I take this back. In the manga, did they show the inside of the cockpit for the Getter Robo? Because in this, we get a lot of in-cockpit shots, and it's hilarious. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It literally looks like Mega's XLR.
there are a lot of buttons.
It's like really large shift sticks that are just like everywhere. Like in a 360 degree around the pilot.
It's it, and I love that Ryoma like pulls out when he's using guns. He like pulls out actual guns or whatever inside the cockpit. Like he, in his hands, he has model guns, and so does the Getter have full size guns. That's a funny touch.
I like that.
Next up, let's talk about Getter Robo G. We saw these technically at the very end of the manga. They have some redesigns for Armageddon. We see a lot of these, right? Because Saotome has like 200 of them or whatever, or even more.
Yeah, they're like autopiloted, I guess.
Yeah, they're like the mass production type Evangelion units, if you will. Dragon is fine. I actually like the face less. It looks the main form looks less cool than Getter One's face, and I like the cape on Getter One a lot. I like the Liger, the blue jetpack one. It's like it's very kind of neat. It's almost like a Valkyrie from Macross, right?
Oh yeah, actually.
And then whatever this third one is, what is it called? Getter Poseidon. What? What is this naming scheme? Dragon, Liger, Poseidon?
Okay, actually, I was going to say it looks like a scuba diver. So I bet that's they got it. They nailed it.
It's pretty cool. That's fine. We don't really see it much.
Yeah.
I like it better than Getter 3. Okay, next up is Shin Getter Robo. And I think we only see Shin Getter 1 and Shin Getter 2. Shin Getter 1 has like blue highlights, and it's got that really sick black cape that forms like bat wings.
Yeah.
And it's got like a big ol' axe too.
Its shoulders are also like somehow even larger.
Yeah.
Than the other ones. It's like absolutely massive.
I really like Shin Getter Robo. And Shin 2 is pretty cool too. It just looks like Getter 2, but like with a jetpack on the back. I don't really need much more. Getter 2 is already one of the best looking ones. And then I don't believe we've seen Shin Getter 3 yet.
I don't remember if we did either.
It's a cool dude. This one's scarier, I think.
This one looks evil.
Yeah.
Right? The other ones don't. This is the evil.
It's got those big
one.
Arm spikes too. I forgot about those. That it like cuts with. Yeah.
That combined with the bat wings is like very much it's evil.
Yeah. Alright. And then I just pulled out a couple of these random, these are like just the super robots that appear in the super robot army. There's the Stilva 04. That's like, it looks like a Mazinger, I think. It's got like the spiky face, but it's thin and it's in a couple fight scenes here. That's a cool looking guy. It looks like a hero suit. I was like, what is this from? This looks like an important like robot, but I guess it's just a grunt. Do you have any thoughts on that guy?
No.
Then there's the... These are all from Go, by the way. These random ones. There's the Barzoff, which are just like big lumps. They're just potatoes.
Yeah, they're kind of cute.
Yeah, I like... And then one of them gets infested by an invader in episode 6-ish, right? That's what they fight.
Yeah. They're adorable. They're very like reminiscent of like a Zeon mobile suit.
Mm-hmm.
Mono-Eye. Claws.
And then I couldn't find the name of it, but I remember that the Japanese one that they have, the Japanese regular mech that like becomes a helicopter. Do you know what I mean? Where it's they're like all stuck on it as it flies away. That thing's interesting. The flying and then the detached head. I thought that was neat. It's not bad for like just a random grunt suit.
It's surprising we actually have a mech corner this week.
We haven't had like a.
It feels like we haven't had one in a long time.
Yeah. We probably won't have one next week unless some like real intense hero suits like get some power ups, right?
Yeah.
We might
have
to talk about like Shin Getter 3 when it finally shows up, but.
Or maybe they'll like transform into like a super powerful one too. We don't know.
There's also my understanding is that there is also Neo Getter Robo, but that's like in a sequel series.
Oh God!
So I don't think that shows up here. We didn't talk about Shin Dragon Getter. It looks like a dragon. It's made of gray material. It's boring. We'll talk about it if it doesn't.
Yeah,
we'll talk about
like
it if it does
too
anything.
Monocolored.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dan, what are your final thoughts?
I think I'm like now used to the style of Getter Robo. Yeah. So I enjoyed the first three episodes more thoroughly the second time through.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't really like the second three episodes, but they were fine. Like, they weren't bad. I was just like, where's my boy Ryoma? That's kind of what I'm watching the show for. But it's, like, I'm interested to see how it'll end now that I know about, like, the whole hullabaloo with the director changing and everything. So I'm eager to see how it goes. And it's a short show, so it's like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, we're already halfway done. 12 episodes. Or 13 episodes. What did you think, Ian?
So I'm with you in that I ripped through, after reading the manga, I ripped through the first three episodes. It was high energy. I was like, kept introducing characters and designs I was familiar with. I was having a great time. I was like, Oh, I'm sort of the target audience for this now that I know anything about Getter Robo. So I'm enjoying this ride. And like, what's going to happen? How's he going to pull it out? Like, how does it... The end of episode one feels like the end of another series. Where he's like, I've built this giant platform. Come fight me at this place where we have historical significance. And you're like, this seems like it's the final fight, but it's episode one.
Yeah.
So I was like, how does this keep evolving? And I was really enjoying seeing how it would top itself and what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get to episode four, and I could feel my momentum crash as we just started wasting time with characters I didn't know about or care about, didn't have a reason to care about. Nothing was happening. It was very slow. And I like pausing to go get food, or I'm pausing to go look at something else, or I'm watching a YouTube video. And just like that sense of momentum was totally gone. I'm hoping, I knew about the director change going into it, so I knew why this was happening. I'm hoping that, like I said, we have recovered from the freefall, and it's going to develop its own sense of momentum. And it may feel completely different from the first three episodes, but it's going to be its own show again.
Okay, I'm with you.
I cannot imagine watching this show and not knowing about the director change and just being like, well, I guess they ran out of ideas three episodes in, right? Like, I think if you were a casual viewer and you watched episodes four or five, you might have just stopped and been like, I'm bored now. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That's my advice for our listeners is, I guess, stick with it because it's there's a reason why it's so nonsense. We got a really good email about Gunbuster. And it's a series of articles of a Japanese translator translating the text in Gunbuster that's not translated in the subtitles. Because there's a lot of signs and like newspapers that aren't translated. And the general thrust of it is that Gunbuster is a very Japanese nationalist work in a way you don't know. Because all of this is buried in the background. Japan runs a global empire based out of Okinawa. I don't know if you knew this. It includes multiple allusions to this Japanese nationalist film. It's all about, like, it's in fact, in the story, America is in debt, so they sell Hawaii to Japan. And then they regret it, so America bombs Pearl Harbor. Think about the ramifications of that particular bit of lore for Gunbuster.
Who wrote Gunbuster?
Hideaki Anno, Daniel. But...
It's still, like, changing my perspective of this.
I know. Really I was quickly. Like, I had no idea. And the guy is like, people love Gunbuster in America because they have no way of knowing that this is happening. And I will post this article on Twitter because it is really interesting.
I feel like I've been tricked and deceived.
Because
I liked Gunbuster, and now it's like, okay, this is a little messed up.
But
now.
He goes on to say, like, my understanding of Anno's biography is he was raised in Okinawa, and he had this, like, whole, like, nationalist upbringing. He likes these nationalist movies, and then... The economic bubble collapses while he's working on Evangelion, and he becomes extremely depressed and basically renounces his views and changes completely, which is why all of his later work, like Shin Godzilla, is like very anti-Japanese government. And like,
yeah, where he shows like how the bureaucracy of Japan is like really slow and crappy.
And he like makes fun of Shinzo Abe in that movie. Like, yeah, it's very different.
Gets destroyed.
So I think like it's, I think it's something to be aware of, and I'm going to read this article series again. We'll post it. Dan, you should check it out because I think you'll enjoy it too.
I will. That's actually piqued my interest quite a bit.
I think Michael sent that into us. Sorry if I credited you wrong. I don't want to pull up my email. But it was really good, and it's really interesting, and I don't think it makes Gunbuster bad, but it is good to be aware of this subtext that's just never made it to America, right?
It also, like, I know it's, like, it's a Japanese show, but, like, at the very end where they say, like, welcome home in Japanese, like, the whole world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Has like now that you say that it's like
he oh, the article no. does call out the thing you spotted by the way that the kanji is flipped to imply that
it's
a dead language.
It's yeah but it's still like their empires the whole world.
And you gotta I mean there are American and Soviet Union characters in it, right? But the way they're treated is not as if they're like not comparable to like the glory of Japan. There's a lot of interesting subtext one thing he points out that is, if you're watching the subs, they never say the phrase like the global empire until episode 5. But if you were reading the Japanese text on screen, it's on screen from immediately episode 1. She goes to the Imperial Academy or whatever. And you have no way of knowing that unless you could read Japanese. And it's not like they're trying to hide these messages, right? This would have been obvious to anyone fluent in Japanese who's taking the time to read what's on the screen. But,
sure,
you know, translators and subtitlers and that sort of thing, you can't fit all of that on the screen. Just because you'd be covering up the entire page with translated material.
Dang! This is, like, blowing my mind.
Yeah, I'll post this on Twitter so everyone can take a look. Awesome. Next week, finish up Get a Robo Armageddon episodes 7 through 13. And then we'll be done with it. If you have the hot deets on what happened with the director switch in Get a Robo Armageddon, you can reach us at mechadoaboutnothing@gmail.com. That's the name of the podcast, @gmail.com. Our website is mechadoo.moe, and our Twitter account is @mechadoopodcast. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Ian.
Until next week, will you be able to survive?